morning and good afternoon, everyone. I'm Elliot Callan, President of Prosperity Financial Group, and I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Meet the Expert. Very exciting today. We have a repeat guest on because of demand, simply because of demand, and that's Dr. Bill Lloyd of Transamerica. His specialty is health and wealth. He is the director of advanced markets or health director of advanced markets. I'd like to welcome you, Bill, to our show again.
It's great to be back here, Elliot, and hello to all my friends in California. I'm here in Frisco, Texas. Today's Monday, the 15th of November, a beautiful sunny day. I hope it's nice wherever you are.
Great. So we're going to talk a little bit about post-COVID now, because we've talked about COVID, we've talked about the middle of COVID. Now, I think we're coming to the end, at least, of COVID being a pandemic and more of an annual seasonal flu type of thing, possibly. I don't know what we want to call it, but why don't you give us an update of where we are with this, where we are with the pandemic, what's ahead for us with shutdowns and so forth. You know, California is kind of a shutdown state, corporate mandate state. We've never seen a corporate mandate, a government mandate that hasn't been good. So give us an update if you would, Bill.
Sure. I'll start with by emphasizing the point that you made, that we're in a transition right now. The viral outbreak, the pandemic, if you will, is actually coming under control. And we're in a transition now from a pandemic disease to an endemic disease. Most experts think COVID-19 is going to be with us forever, just like the everyday common cold, just like the annual seasonal flu. We've learned many lessons from this COVID-19 pandemic, and we'll be able to apply them going forward. Now, there's a couple of caveats, though. Currently, there are no new viral strains on the horizon. And if that is the case, then this will remain a pandemic of the unvaccinated. That is to say, people getting sick, seriously sick, dying from COVID-19 going forward will simply be those that don't have the immune capacity to fight the disease. Now, as far as an update, globally right now, there's nearly a quarter billion people who've been infected by COVID-19, 253 million worldwide, with roughly 7.5 million deaths. Here in the United States, there are 47 million confirmed cases of COVID-19 infection. Now, let's stop and take a breath here. 47 million cases, that means 47 million infections. It doesn't mean 47 million people got sick. In fact, that number is probably less than 20%. But here's the issue. As you already know, many people harbor the COVID-19 virus, never get sick, but succeed in giving it to other people. COVID-19 has an incubation period of 5 to 7 days. Let's compare that to the seasonal winter flu. If you have the flu and someone else comes in contact with you and you touch them or share a drink or something, that person will have a fever tomorrow. They will be sick tomorrow. Headache, high temperature, feeling sick, just like the flu. That doesn't happen with COVID-19. For the first 5 days, you are infected, but you may have no symptoms whatsoever, and yet your body is able to reproduce the virus and allow you to give it to plenty more other people. So that's why, even if you're vaccinated, even if you're boosted, even if they feel great, you still need to wear your mask and practice the social distancing to protect everybody else who may contract COVID-19 from you, even though you never got sick. Here in the United States right now, there are about 41,000 Americans who have been hospitalized. The vast majority of them are unvaccinated. Over 99% of COVID deaths in hospital are among the unvaccinated. I'm running out of ideas to convince people you really should rethink the vaccine if you haven't gotten it yet. And when you go in, go ahead and get your flu shot as well. Now, let's balance this information about cases. I didn't say illness, I said cases, right? And where it's gone and what the trends are going forward. Right now, they're reporting about 83,000 new cases on a 7-day average, 83,000 a day on a 7-day average. That means 83,000 positive tests. It doesn't mean 83,000 sick people. Now, what happens? What happens to someone, let's say they did get the vaccine or they previously had COVID? How is it they're contracting this virus again? Doesn't your immune system work? We got to be careful about this. It's important to know in the early stages of COVID-19 infection, it doesn't get inside your body. It populates in your mouth and in your nose, where you do not have direct contact with the blood system, right? Because it's your vascular system that has all those wonderful lymphocytes and all those wonderful proteins that are going to destroy the COVID-19 virus, but they're not there yet. They're in the mouth and they're in the nose. And this new Delta variant is very tricky and very, very capable of reproducing hundreds of millions of copies of that virus in those first 3 or 4 days before the bug finally enters your body. Now, at that point, if you've had the vaccine or you previously have COVID, in most healthy people, your body will destroy the virus. But for those first 5 days, you could be giving it to other people. And in fact, you could have had a COVID test and it would come back positive, the one in your mouth or the one in your nose, because you are carrying the virus. So this draws us to the discussion of the vaccine. What is the vaccine supposed to do? Be careful. Nobody ever said the vaccine will prevent you from getting the infection. You go back and look at the original documents for this and every other vaccine. The purpose of vaccines is to reduce the transmission of disease, mitigate the symptoms, ease the symptoms if you do become infected, reduce the risk of hospitalization, and reduce the risk of death. Those are the goals of vaccine. The goal was never, you get this vaccine, you will not get the disease. That's not true. That's not true for the measles vaccine. That's not true for smallpox. You know, the efficiency of the smallpox vaccine is only about 60%. Only about 60%. Plenty of people with the smallpox shot can still get smallpox. Fortunately, it's not here. It's not in an endemic area. And if you were to go to some part of the world where there still are a few random cases of smallpox, you could be vaccinated against that. So when we talk about COVID-19, the whole idea about the vaccination is protecting you, boosting your immune system, right? Reducing the chance of severe illness and your ability to pass it on to other people. That's what it's all about. And depending on what brand you look at, for the three approved in the United States, they're all at 88, 92, 95% effective. That's never happened before. There are no 100% effective vaccines, but they're getting real good at it. And then when you get a booster, it raises that number even higher. So here in the United States right now, there are 194 million Americans who are eligible for the vaccine and have since been fully vaccinated, 2 shots. That's 58% of the eligible population, which up until last week was Americans 12 and older. Of course, now they've moved it up for 5 to 12. And here in Texas, they're already giving kids the shot. And so those numbers are going to expand. And that's a really good thing, because this Delta variant continues to spread like wildfire wherever it can. And if it finds dry grass, the fire continues. If it finds wet grass, the fire stops. That's it. So what are we hearing now? What are we hearing? Well, in states like Vermont, right? Vermont has the highest vaccination rate in the country, close to 90%. Well, they have new cases of COVID. And in fact, it's actually starting to rise. Cases, positive tests. That's all we're talking about, positive tests. Vermont, increase in COVID cases. But the number of hospitalizations and deaths has stayed flat because the people were vaccinated. You go out to Colorado, number of new cases, it's rising also. But so are the hospitalizations and the deaths, because so many people in Colorado, they're only in the mid-50s, have not been vaccinated. As long as that COVID-19 Delta variant has one more person it can find, it will. This is the pandemic of the unvaccinated. Now, 69% of Americans, or 226 million, have already had at least their first shot. You need to get that second shot within 28 days of the first one as best possible. If not, they'll start the sequence over again. More good news. 86% of Americans over the age of 65, 86% have been fully vaccinated. And as you know, that was really the hotspot for the outbreak a year ago. 80% of Americans who died from COVID were age 60 or older. Many of them were in residential assisted living, skilled nursing care facilities. Many of them. Others had multiple health problems. That new word you learned this year, comorbidities. Folks that have more than one chronic condition, diabetes, a little high blood pressure, lipid problem, maybe COPD from smoking, and then on top of that, get COVID. That was a recipe for disaster. Back to the folks over 65, 98% of Americans over 65 have had at least their first vaccine. So we made tremendous progress in helping older Americans. Right now, the pace has picked up on vaccinations. Across the country, they're putting down about 800,000 new injections every day. A month ago, it was less than 30,000. It was really sad. But with winter coming, a lot of people are now finally embracing the message. We now know, you know, with 300 plus million Americans already taken at least one shot, there have been very few instances of serious side effects or death. And those numbers pale in comparison to the complications and the mortality of COVID-19. Globally, they've given out 7.5 billion injections so far. But the data shows the three best products are the three approved by our FDA, the Moderna and the Pfizer. Those are what they call the mRNA, the genetic material vaccines, and the Johnson & Johnson. All of them now also are relying on booster doses for those that are 4 to 6 months out from their second dose. Go ahead and get that booster. And if you're sore the next day or you have a headache or knocks the wind out of you, good for you. It's telling you your immune system is on duty. Take a Tylenol. You'll be better tomorrow.
So, Bill, I'm going to continue on the same theme that you've started here. And by the way, it's Prosperity Financial Group, and our job is to help our clients sleep better at night, make money, and leave wealth for their children. The unvaccinated people who have gotten COVID and antibodies, there seems to be no respect for them in the marketplace. None of the states care about that when it says mandates, like in our county, there's a mandate with a test if you've or a mandate that you show a vaccine card. But for people that have had COVID, don't they have antibodies running through their system?
It is an excellent point, right? So you've never been vaccinated, you got COVID, you do have natural immunity. What we find is the quality, the intensity, and the duration of that immunity is different than the man-made vaccines, which are specifically designed to ramp up your immune system. It all comes down to something called neutralizing antibodies. And when you gain immunity from having COVID-19, your body makes a good supply of these antibodies, but they peak after 60 days or so. And then at 3, 4, 5 months out, you don't really have much protection. Whereas if you complete the series of the vaccines, whether it's Moderna, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, well, then you're going to have a very quick rise in those neutralizing antibodies, and they're going to stay there. They're going to stay there for at least a year. Wonderful protection. And for those that go and get the booster, it's going to take it to an even higher tier. What does that mean? More of those antibodies that are able to respond quicker, because they're in circulation already, respond quicker and have memory. That'll probably take you out even more than a year. But by then, we're worried about what changes COVID-19 will undergo, just like we do about influenza every year as it travels around the world. And they're already working and tracking on possible new strains of COVID-19 that we'll probably have to protect ourselves with a year from now when we get our 2023 flu shots.
So our job is to help clients make money and enjoy life. And travel is the number one goal of retirees nowadays. And of course, travel on cruise ships and travel in Europe and so forth. These are the two top things that people want to do. So when does that world open up for all of our clients?
Certainly. The world is open right now. Just last week, they've opened all the pathways in and out of the United States for U.S. citizens. We'll talk first about being on an aircraft versus being on a cruise ship, for example. Always check with the airline beforehand, because in certain parts of the country, Hawaii, for example, they still have far more stringent requirements regarding vaccination and COVID testing. So always check with your destination as to what's going to happen. But yes, the airports report very full planes. So you're going to want to think about all those guidelines that we've been teaching everyone for a year now. I have flown 6 times in the past week, so I'm quite familiar with what's going on. They are still practicing the social distancing. I will have to say the airlines have been rigorous in enforcing the wearing of the masks, and they should. What's the point? If you're not going to wear it, why would anybody wear it? The point is we should all be wearing those masks and practicing the social distance. Now, the CDC says if you were to scale activities from 1 to 10, most dangerous, least dangerous, well, being naked in a sauna next to somebody with COVID-19, actively infected and sick and coughing, that would be a 1. That would be super dangerous, super stupid, and increase your risk of getting COVID-19. But guess what? Riding a passenger plane on a United States airline is all the way down to a 10. They say it is very safe because of the enforcement of the social distancing and the masks, because of the ventilation and purification systems that are on those planes, and because of the manual cleaning that goes on between the flights and overnight when they bombard these planes, either with chemical sprays or ultraviolet radiation to further eliminate the chances of COVID-19 infection. So I would feel very confident, I already did, feel very confident about traveling. You'll have no choice. Once you enter the airport, you've got to wear that mask. Of course, when you eat or take a sip, you can take it off, but then the mask goes back on. Play the game, and you'll have a safe trip. Now, depending where you go, it's important to know what the rates of COVID infection are. If you're flying into Germany, they're having a horrible outbreak of the Delta right now. And there's a lot of anti-vaccination sentimentality in Germany. And so that means there are plenty of vulnerable people. They didn't fare so badly in the first wave, but with Delta, they're having a very difficult time. And so you would not want to go to an area that has an outburst of COVID-19, not so much because you might get it, but the hospitals are full. They're in the hallways. And let's say you went to one of these countries and you fell and broke your leg, or you had a heart attack, or an asthma attack, right? The last place you'd want to go would be a hospital. It would just be a den of COVID. You wouldn't want that. And the chances are they might not even let you come in anyway, and then you're stranded. So always focus on your destination. Now, for folks that are traveling on cruise lines, there was arguments between the cruise lines and the United States about what to do about passengers disembarking from the United States, let's say in Miami, Lauderdale, New York, and going into the Caribbean or going to Europe. And they pretty much have reached peace on that. They're going to demand a regular PCR COVID test. All right. So that's the one that takes 2 days to get the results back online from. This is not a rapid test. It's not an antigen test. They're going to want the real PCR test within 48 hours of you getting on the boat. When you, depending on the line, different cruise lines, they may do a rapid test on you right there. They will continue to do them periodically during the cruise, every 5 to 7 days. And you're also going to have to bring your immunization card. So you have to meet all four of those requirements to get on a U.S. cruise ship leaving the United States. Of course, same rules apply. I'm not sure you're going to want to get on board one of these 18-story floating apartment buildings. I'm not trying to beat up one cruise line or the other, but you could be putting yourself in a precarious situation. Because remember, you could have a negative COVID test the day you get infected by COVID, and the next day your test will still be negative, but now you're giving it to other people. So it's all about lowering the risk, Elliot. And I know that all of your clients at Prosperity Financial Group will take the time to diligently know what the rules are for their specific trip, for their specific carrier, and for their specific destination.
So I know, as we've talked about masks, that I know you're a big proponent of the mask. That's obvious right now. And of course, in California, and I just came back from Texas, where very few people wore a mask. And I'll be back down there 2 weeks. So you live there. I mean, masks are an anomaly in a lot of places down there. But it's, I feel like, you know, we're going to have COVID here for many years to come. We're going to have the flu most years, although last year we didn't get it, but most years we're going to have it.
Why didn't we get it last year, Elliot? Why didn't we get it last year?
Because I think we wore masks, but we were nuts, crazy with the germs and the washing. You know, I remember
washing hands, staying home, not going into crowds because they wouldn't let us.
But Bill, right? Remember they said, stop using the germ soap, anti-germ soap, because you were going to create super bugs with this. That was the term 3 years ago. Now it's used it all the time. You know, I can't go anywhere without using it. It's in every airport. It's in every hotel. It's in many restaurants as you come out of the bath. It's everywhere. But are masks here to stay now? Should I just go get my designer mask and keep them around for years and years to come?
No, that's not the case. As we continue on out of pandemic and into an endemic state, then just like flu season, when things get hot, they'll notify you that it's time to get back in your mask. It's time to avoid crowds. You know, it's time to practice your social distancing. And then when it passes, and here in the United States, if we don't have another strain, by the time the winter is over, we'll pretty much be out of those precautions we expect right now, barring another new strain. Everybody who hasn't gotten it, gotten COVID-19 yet, will, because this Delta strain is ruthless. It is ruthless. And eventually we'll reach that, you know, that herd immunity. It's going to take like 90% of Americans either being vaccinated or they've already successfully gotten through COVID-19. And when it gets to be that high, the virus has no place to go. Did you know the virus needs 10 people in order to make one infection? That's right. So as far as its efficiency of transmission, it has to be in the presence of 10 vulnerable people in order for one person to get it. Well, what if 9 of those people were immune to the disease? Ah, then the virus has no place to go. That's where we're heading for, that enough Americans have either survived the infection or are vaccinated and hopefully boosted, and the virus will have no place to go. And then the virus will be elsewhere in the world. Of course, there are countries and continents where there are still billions of unvaccinated people. So there's plenty of firewood around. There's plenty of dry grass around to allow this virus to continue to circulate around the world. And when it does, there'll be another strain. But hold on, it's a coronavirus. So the changes, these mutations, do not affect the fundamentals of the virus. They simply affect its ability to communicate from one person to the other. And that's when they'll come back and say, here's the new strain. We anticipate it'll be in the country by this time. And we're going to start with the masks and all the other procedures going forward.
So, Bill, I know that statistically there's overwhelming high percentage of people that have died that have been over the age of 65, even 70, with pre-existing conditions. And sadly, some younger people who didn't even know they had a pre-existing condition with the heart or the lungs. So the argument for get these masks off, because who cares if you get it, you'll get it natural antibodies, is really if you're under 65 or under 60, certainly, that the argument is you don't need one. Just protect the people that are most vulnerable. And that's how you protect society. Keep those that are 65 home, away from everybody, and stop locking down everybody that if they get it, they get it. Statistically, it won't really hurt them, even though you know that statistically they don't. That's not always true. But for the most part, right, why don't we just protect the most vulnerable and let the rest of the world continue being normal? And I meant world.
Elliot, where were you 18 months ago? Because that's the beauty. That's the gift of 2020 hindsight. If we knew what you're just saying now was true 18 months ago, this pandemic would have taken an extraordinarily different pattern, different performance. And what I mean by that is, you'll recall in mid-March, late March of 2020, they had a federal lockdown, all 50 states. And at that time, all 50 states weren't suffering an outbreak of COVID-19, but they wanted to contain it and stop it from being transmitted. The public health experts now say the smarter play would have been to identify where the hotspots were, and just like you say, go full beast mode on protecting the vulnerable and let the rest of the country go about its business instead of all of the economic consequences we suffered because of everybody being shut down and work from home, et cetera. We didn't do it that way at the very beginning. They were trying to use playbooks for other infections because they didn't have a novel coronavirus playbook. But to that point, there were some areas of the world, people know about Denmark, where Denmark said, we don't care, we're just going to burn through it. We're just going to burn through it. We feel bad for those that are going to suffer from it, but we can't shut down our country. Switzerland tried too. They got away with it for about 3 months. And then in these smaller countries, the toll of the cases completely overwhelmed their healthcare system. And this is long before the vaccines were available, and they suffered mightily. So there has to be balance between common sense public health guidance and implementation and enforcement of that guidance. And it has to be calibrated to the local scene. This is why Florida and Texas got into so much trouble up front, because they basically refused to play the game. There's no pandemic here. And so you remember all the pictures of Florida, people on the beaches, et cetera, while the nation was raging in pandemic, and similar stories in Texas as well. And by the time the disease did come to Florida, did come to Texas, we were out of nationwide lockdown. And basically, every state was left to themselves to decide what to do. Well, politically, you could see where the leadership in Florida and Texas were thinking, well, we can't reverse now. What would the people think of us? And then the citizens of those states basically were supporting their government, saying, we're going to be OK. Well, good for them. If they ended up OK, that's fine. But I think many people agree there was excess of mortality from COVID-19 because we failed to imagine how this pandemic would play out. And so we started big right up front and shut everything down, when in fact, it should have been a more calculated approach. And like you said, isolate the vulnerable. If we knew exactly who they were at that time, isolate the vulnerable before they're exposed, and then let everybody else carry on. That's exactly how we do it during flu season. You get everybody over 60 their flu shot, and everybody else goes to work. And if somebody gets the flu, they stay home for a couple of days. On average, 65,000 Americans die every year from the influenza winter, normal winter flu, 65,000. It wasn't a third of that last year because we were all practicing those good social guidelines and protective measures. It remains to be seen what's going to happen this winter now, because there's still hangover from COVID-19 plus a new influenza strain, a modification of the existing influenza A. And so time is going to tell. Everybody tends to think flu and winter. Yeah, it starts in winter. Early cases can be reported as early in October, but it's usually not till after Christmas. Oh, people getting together after Christmas and into the spring. March and April are really the big bad months for influenza. And so we won't have any hard data from there. But I got a strong feeling with people staying alert about protecting themselves from COVID will offer themselves protection from flu as well. Remember, the COVID vaccine won't protect you from the flu, and the flu vaccine won't protect you from COVID.
So, Bill, I've got two more questions for you, and I really appreciate your time here. And they're more business-oriented questions. And the first one, I'm an employer, run a company, small business. Lots of our clients are employers. We've got people here that are vaccinated. We've got people unvaccinated. We've got people in our office. Everybody unvaccinated has gotten COVID at this point. What do I need to know as an employer here?
Sure. Well, I would advise any employers just to go to coronavirus.gov, where they have the most current CDC guidelines, workplace guidelines for operating in a pandemic like COVID-19. And this applies to small organizations as well as multinational large companies. What's important is that the workflow be designed so that people, let's just say it, who are afraid to come in can still continue to work from home. Some creative employers have staggered the workforce where possible to try to concentrate those who are vaccinated in one area or one line of activity compared to those that don't. Hospitals, for example, are doing that now, and they're breaking down wards among those people who do have COVID and those that don't. Some companies can't do that. Some stagger the work hours so that only vaccinated people come into the office before 1 p.m. and unvaccinated afterwards. or perhaps staggering who's actually working from home and who comes in. But the reality is, if everybody has to come in and everybody's in the office just like 2 years ago, well, then it's on each individual with help from the employer to make sure that they're practicing those safety guidelines, that they are wearing their masks, they are using the hand sanitizers and maintaining a safe distance between each of them, limiting meetings, giving people more flex time. And again, if they're feeling uncomfortable about anything, allowing them to work from home.
Great. And final question, also on a business note, Bill. And that is that this new RNA strain is a new development. I know it's not that new. It's been in the works for many years, but most of us have never heard of it. It's going to change the world of cancer. It's going to change every way we look at science now. So as a business investor for clients that say, wait, how do I capitalize on all these new upcoming technologies that are coming out? What should we be aware of that's going to, where our world is going to change so dramatically, like the end of chemotherapy, maybe the end of radiation? What's going to change where we can look at it as financial advisors and advise our clients? This is where we should put money.
The important message I want to share in answering that question is discovery never stops. Discovery never stops. People are saying, well, I think the big bump from Moderna and Pfizer is over now. They know how to make this vaccine, so we're just going to tuck that away for now. Baloney. There's more competition now. You think we're at the end of vaccine discovery and development? We're just getting started. We were locked into a paradigm for the last 40 years of how vaccines were made. And now it's been completely turned on its head. And look at the success it's had. Don't you think there's going to be more people rushing into researching vaccine development for even better, safer ways of protecting society? And the answer is yes. And why? Because there's an enormous financial reward. So by staying close to the business and tracking the businesses that are already engaged in this line of work, they're not giving up and they haven't stopped. There will be the need for more vaccines and better vaccines going forward. And this applies to every domain within healthcare and scientific evolution. The discovery never stops. Organ transplantation, visual restoration, artificial retinas, it will never end. You mentioned cancer chemotherapy, and now with the wonderful targeted therapies, the small molecules, the monoclonal antibodies, this is a great time to have cancer. 70% of all cancers diagnosed in the United States in 2022, and not just the skin cancers, I mean the real cancers, 70% will be curable. That means 5 years from now, the person's healthy and no recurrence of disease. Why? Because we now have these wonderful therapies. They're not stopping. We're not at the end of the road. We're just getting started. So there are more every day. There's a new molecule that's introduced. So how does somebody successfully track that? Well, you can run around and chase these small biotech companies, but eventually they're going to be gobbled up by you know who. And so for those looking for long-term results, staying with the major recognizable brands, that's where these smaller companies are headed for. And then when they do, you'll be perfectly positioned. But don't fool yourselves for a second, whether it's diabetes, cancer, Alzheimer's disease, discovery never stops.
Well, we've been talking to Dr. Bill Lloyd of Transamerica. This has been great. Thank you for joining us on Meet the Expert. And we look forward to seeing everybody on the next episode. Thank you, Bill.
Happy Thanksgiving to all. Stay well, and I look forward to the chance to come visit you all in person in 2022.